You're listening to The Oddscast, the original UFC betting podcast that's straight to the point. Hosted by leading MMA oddsmaker Nick Kalikas and MMA journalist Brian Heminger, they provide you the absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting. MMAoddsbreaker.com. Don't place your wagers without us.
Welcome to the Oddscast, presented by BetDSI. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC on ESPN 4 event, which takes place in San Antonio, Texas. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, Kyle Marley lost one unit on his free bet on UFC on ESPN plus 13, on Livia Souza, but he did win 3.78 units with his premium plays. Kyle has his bets and fantasy MMA picks available now on MMAoddsbreaker.com. Back to the present, UFC on ESPN 4 features a 13 fight card in total and will be aired exclusively on ESPN this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on ESPN preliminary card is a bantamweight contest between Domingo Pilarte, who is 8-1, and Felipe Calares, who is also 8-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Couple quick shout-outs, as always. Make sure you guys check out BetDSI, our sponsored sportsbook. They do a great job. They have a lot of fights up on the board right now, and the lines that I quote, the updated lines are going to be from betdsi.eu, so always check those guys out. And like Brian said, head over to MMAoddsbreaker.com, click on our premium picks tab, and check out Big Marley 3's premium plays. The guy's been on fire. He's up like 27K in the last year or so. I mean, if you're missing his plays, you're definitely missing out. The guy's been awesome. He's one of the best cappers in the world, and he's proven it time and time again. So make sure you check out Big Marley 3's plays on the MMA Oddsbreaker premium tab. Now, getting right into the fights, Pilarte opened minus 275, the comeback on Corrales at plus 195. And right now, what we're seeing over at BetDSI is Pilarte at minus 417, the comeback on Corrales at plus 298. So line margins have tightened up, and there's been a lot of action coming in Pilarte's way since it opened across the board. I'm looking at the Don Best screen right now as well, and there are some 3.5 ones out there. It looks like in Vegas there's a 320, 330 out there at Westgate. So there's some different lines, but it's anywhere between, like I just mentioned, the 320 to 400, and a lot of people believing in Pilarte right now. And rightfully so. I mean, the guy was definitely impressive. He's the type of fighter that has skill in every area, but he's a finisher. I mean, Pilarte has some length and size for the weight class. They are fighting a bantamweight. So he's tall, he's long, he's got some power. He's not one of these skinny guys that doesn't have some power to go along with the frame. So he's got a good solid frame for the division, for the bantamweight division, and he's got skill to go along with it. He's got some good movement, some decent footwork. Of course, he's a southpaw, so that helps as well in most cases. But defensively, from that southpaw stance, as we saw on the Contender Series, he has a Contender Series bet. He had some issues in his fight, and it was actually against Vince Morales, which obviously is a UFC in the UFC right now as we speak. But if you go back and check out the Contender Series fight, man, that was a war, and he had to dig deep, Pilarte did, to come back and win that fight. But he was looking early on, and then he got some trouble. He got split open. It was pretty bad, but he dug in there deep, and they came out in the second round and got the W. So that was pretty impressive. It was a great comeback win for him. But that said, if you look at his previous fights as well, I mean, he's had a lot of decent competition outside of the UFC. He's fought in LFA, Legacy. So he's experienced some decent, like I said, competition. And with his frame and with the ability that he has, he just makes it a tough out, because he could take you down. He has good wrestling. He's able to beat you and submit you on the ground. And again, on the feet, he's not easy to deal with. Calares, on the other hand, I was pretty impressed with him as well overall. I mean, I know, you know, a lot of people are not that high on him. That's why they're fading him here. He does struggle with takedown defense, and he's still a little raw. He is dropping down to the bantamweight division, of course. So I think in his second fight here in the UFC, I think we're going to see some better things from Calares at bantamweight. I think that was really the good move. Overall, again, he's kind of a well-rounded fighter, and I'm saying kind of because he's more of a grappling-based fighter, in my opinion, but he does have a little bit of power in the feet. He's a little slow and predictable on the feet, and I think that's where Pilarte is going to have a lot of success. But make no mistake, when Calares does land on you, it can be very effective, and he has enough power to put you out. So I think Pilarte definitely has to have some respect with Calares, even if it does play on the feet. The only thing that bothers me, I guess, the most with Kolar is he does have a good ground game, like I mentioned, but he can be put on his back and he can be controlled a little bit there as well. So I think Pilardi can get some takedowns and maybe possibly just steal the fight that way as well. So I think it'll be back and forth. It's going to be a more competitive fight than everybody's indicating right now. So at minus 300, 350, 400, I would stay away from it at this point, honestly, because I think people are underestimating Kolar a little bit too much in this spot. I think it is going to be an exciting fight. It'll go back and forth. And I think Pilardi should win because he has several advantages in this fight. So he's the rightful favorite. And I'm pick him to win, but at where it's at right now, I would stay away, just sit back and watch the fight. So my pick is Pilardi to win, and unfortunately for Kolaris, he's going to, you know, suffer back-to-back losses in the UFC, but hopefully they keep him around and maybe give him another chance against a lesser opponent.
Yeah, Pilardi is a very talented fighter, and he's big, he's long for the division. He has a good jab too, which is really important if you're going to be, you know, a 6-foot bantamweight. You need to be able to keep guys from getting inside and throwing that big overhand right and knocking you down. He also has a pretty good underrated ground game. So, I think Pilardi, as long as he keeps it on at distance, he can control the fight against Kolaris there. And if it goes to the floor, I think it's Pilardi that can get takedowns because, Kolaris got taken down repeatedly in his, UFC debut. So, I really feel like, this is a match made for Pilardi. He's a guy that I think the UFC thinks highly of. He has a unique build for the division. Kolaris is dangerous. I mean, he was a jungle fight champion in, 2017. So, you know, he's clearly a talented fighter, but I just don't feel he has the tools to deal with Pilardi's size. So I think Pilardi controls the action with the jab on the feet. And if it goes to the floor, I think it's Pilardi taking it there, and I think he'd be in top position. So I'm going to pick Pilardi to get the win. Now, sticking with the bantamweight division, we have Mario Bautista, who is 6-1, taking on Jin Soo Sun, who is 9-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Sun open minus 265, the comeback on Bautista plus 185. Right now over at BetDSI, it's Sun minus 208, the comeback on Bautista plus 172. Line margins have tightened up. This time the dog got a little bit more action coming in his way. And I get it. I'm a little bit surprised, but I do get it. Bautista, in my opinion, looked very good against Sandhagen. First of all, let me just say this. Bautista stepped in short notice, UFC debut, took on Corey Sandhagen, which is one of the better fighters, obviously, right now in the weight class. And I mean, what a fighter Sandhagen is. If you go back and watch that fight again, you're going to just be scratching your head on how unorthodox but fun Sandhagen is to watch. But Bautista was hanging in there with him. So I think what I'm trying to spit out here is Bautista had a big step up in competition, and he actually performed respectfully, in my opinion. I mean, he was respectable, definitely. I mean, he ended up getting finished by an amazing submission on the ground by Sandhagen, but I think he actually, up until that point, performed relatively well. That said, Sun was amazing against Peter Yan as well. I mean, Yan, another one of these top tier fighters, obviously, in weight class that we you know, think that he's going to be a future title contender. And he realistically is. I mean, the guy is definitely a stud, but he fought Sun and Sun took him to the limit. I mean, Sun stepped in again on short notice and he got takedowns on Peter Yan. He ended up showing a good aggressive striking game. I mean, he was very, very impressive. I expected some good things coming into that fight, but none of us expected Sun to hang with Yan. So what I'm trying to say here is both of these guys stepped in to hot water in their UFC debut on short notice and performed really well. Obviously, Sun making it a closer decision with Yan, more people are going to respect that. But I'm glad to see the bettors out there not being fooled, because I think this is going to be an awesome fight. This might be the best fight on the card, honestly, because both of these guys are young and talented, and they're going to get better. They got a little bit more confidence coming into this fight, despite coming off a loss. I believe that truly. And it should be fireworks. Now, Bautista is going to be a little bit bigger, and I think Bautista has some advantages in this fight that people don't realize. I know the Sun's takedown defense is really good. In fact, his wrestling was good. He's so strong, I mean, generally speaking. And I should mention this as well. He's a protege of the Korean Zombie. So Korean Zombie, he's working with him, and that's something to be said right now. Obviously, Zombie coming off that big win. So I think there's a lot going for him, a lot of good progress and a lot of good momentum right now for the camp, for his camp as well. So Sun is a dangerous guy to be in there against right now. But again, Bautista coming off that loss, I think he's going to be motivated to get his win. And this is a winnable fight for him. I think this fight will go back and forth. Batista's probably going to look for some takedowns. It's not going to be easy. Bautista does have some underrated power on the feet as well. So if these guys are exchanging, even though Sun's chin held up pretty well and he seemed to absorb a lot of punishment with no problem, I think it's still going to be a dangerous fight for him. So back and forth I go a little bit. I mean, like I said, I know Sun's a 2-1 favorite, and it should be easier to pick him, but I really think Batista's going to show up here and make this a really close fight. So I'm slightly leaning Sun's way, but as far as a betting perspective, I would not lay the chalk, even where it is now. I know that the underdog got played already in this spot, and I think that's the only way to go. I think it's a dog or pass situation, even at this point right here. But I am going to pick Sun. It's one of those spots where I think Sun might edge him out a little bit here. But as far as putting my money on Sun right now, Batista's going to end up performing a lot better than we all expect. So I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't lay the chalk on him. So my pick is Sun, but it should be a heck of a fight. Like I said, this is probably the most underrated fight on the whole card.
Yeah, this really is an intriguing bout because both of these guys, even though they're coming off of losses, it was both against studs. I mean, Batista, he lost to Sandhagen, and he had his moments there. I mean, he was not, you know, getting completely overwhelmed on the feet, and then he did score a takedown against Sandhagen. He just got tapped with an armbar. And then Sun, I mean, my goodness, he went toe-to-toe with Peter Yan, and that was a competitive scrap, and they were both hitting the hell out of each other and ended up being a fight of the night. So that was just an incredible performance. So both of these guys had their moments against guys that are currently, you know, top 10 UFC bantamweights in their UFC debuts. So I am totally with Nick. I think this is going to be a very interesting scrap. What it really boils down to for me is I think Sun is going to get the better of the stand-up because he's just so aggressive and powerful and durable. I mean, he can just take it. So he's willing to get in your face and exchange, while Batista, he's good on the feet, but I think where he's really going to shine here is with takedowns. I mean, he got it against Sandhagen. I think potentially he can get him against Sun. I don't think they'll come easy, though. So if Batista has to really work for those takedowns, then I think it plays right into Sun's game because I think Sun can push a really heavy tempo for 3 straight rounds. And if Batista's really working for takedowns, he's going to get worn out. So I think Sun gets the better of the feet. I think eventually Sun starts stuffing takedowns or potentially could stuff them from the beginning. And I expect Sun to take a TKO or maybe a decision victory from outpointing or outpacing Batista with the stand-up. Now, again, sticking with the bantamweight division, we have Ray Borg, who is 11-4, taking on Gabriel Silva, who is 8-0. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Borg opened -295, the comeback on Silva at +215. Right now, over at BetDSI, it's Borg -217, the comeback on Silva +184. So again, line margins have tightened up and more action coming in the dog's way. Another spot that I understand, honestly, especially from what we've seen from Ray Borg recently. I mean, he's just not the same fighter. I know he's got, you know, some personal issues again with his family, with his son. And I have a ton of respect for, I can imagine what he's going through as a parent. So, but I mean, his spirits seem high and which has been good. I mean, he's able to handle everything well, it seems like thus far, but it has to be affecting his fight camp. He came in even last fight and had, you know, trouble making the bantamweight limit, and he's actually a flyweight. So that tells you a lot of things. I'm not sure where Borg is personally right now in his life. Now, you know, I think he's obviously going to get back on track. Things are probably settling down a little bit. And again, mentally, the guy is definitely tough as nails, even physically, man. I mean, if you see some of the fights he's been in, he could definitely take a beating. It's hard to finish Borg. That last fight that he was in against Kenny was a very close fight that could have definitely went either way and against high caliber competition. So Borg, I mean, he's top of the food chain for sure in every aspect. Now, of course, it's highlighted by his ground game. I mean, the guy is one of the best ground practitioners in the sport. I mean, it's so fun to watch this guy on the ground with his scrambling ability, with his just submission ability in general, with his IQ on the ground. It's just a thing of beauty. I mean, his wrestling's underrated, everything across the board. His stand-up's not bad. He moves well. He's got some speed. He mixes in kicks well. So there's a lot to like about Borg. Silva, on the other hand, he's a little bit of more of an unknown coming into this fight. Of course, you know, there's a little bit out there on him, and we all have some high expectations. Obviously, he's undefeated. He's 24 years old. He is dropping down to bantamweight. Now, he's in bantamweight earlier in his career, but he's been fighting more recently at featherweight. Now he's going back down to bantamweight, which I like, because he is going to have some physical strength and size over Borg in this spot here. He actually is going to have an 8-inch reach advantage, if I'm not mistaken. So that's huge in this spot. I think if you look back and you see how these guys match up, obviously Silva is more of a striking based fighter. He's going to come in here looking to sprawl and brawl and take Borg's head off. And he's got the kind of knockout power that if he touches you, man, I mean, he does put opponents away. And right now, I mean, his track record, even before the UFC, is not really that bad. He doesn't have obviously near the experience Borg does, but this guy has put some decent fighters away, and you could see the progression in his game as well. So I think, you know, there's still yet a lot of stuff yet to be determined with Silva. And what bothers me and is a little bit concerning is his ground defense, is his take defense. I need to see more of that. Outside of that, if he could stuff the takedowns, like I said, here against Borg, he's probably going to win this fight, but I'm not confident yet. I haven't been able to figure out if he can, you know, stuff a guy like Borg, if he can survive against a guy like Borg on the ground. I'm not that confident there. And that's exactly the game plan Borg is going to use here. There's no doubt about that. So with that said, I'm going to lean towards Borg because I think his ground game is so dominant in most cases, and I'm not trusting Silva all that well right now. But I must say this, if I'm going to bet this fight, I would definitely not lay the chalk on Borg. This is one of those fights that I do think the underdog's coming in here, and he could very well be live. I mean, if he does have the takedown defense, I'm mentioning it again for the 100th time, to withstand Borg, his wrestling, then obviously Silva, I think, could do enough damage to probably finish Borg. Even no matter how tough he is, I think Silva has that kind of knockout power, and this guy has some special ability. So I do see a lot of upside to Silva. He just has to step in here and show me it, you know, before I become a true believer. So it's a dog or pass situation. There's no doubt about it. I think Silva can pull off the win, but as far as a pure pick goes, again, I know what we got in Borg. I know what he's going to go for, and it's hard for me to pick against him because it's so hard to stop him. So the pick is Borg to win, but not a confident one.
And I'm going to go with Borg as well. I think, you know, he was competitive in that last fight in the move up to bantamweight. And you could definitely argue he could have or should have won that fight, against Kenny, but against Gabriel Silva here, the main thing is get it to the floor because Silva is a power on the feet. He's the brother of Eric Silva, UFC vet. His last fight, I think he ended it in like 83 seconds. The main issue with Silva is, I mean, he's just been so inactive. I think he's fought 7 times in 8 years. So, he just has not been able to stay in there, string fights together, but it worked out for him. He's in the UFC now, but, on the feet, this is going to be Silva's fight if it stays standing. Borg is tremendous on the ground, but he just has to get it there. He's not a ridiculously good wrestler, but I expect that he should be able to get this fight to the floor. I mean, it's just all about closing that distance and getting a hold of Silva, dragging him to the ground, whatever it takes. Because on the feet, while Borg has made some strides in his stand-up over the past few years, he's nowhere close to as dangerous as Silva is. I mean, Silva is a powerhouse. He has heavy hands. He can put Borg out potentially, although Borg is tough as nails. You know, I just do not want to see him get into a slugfest with Silva on the feet. I mean, that would just be really dumb. If Borg wants to win this fight, he takes us to the floor in a hurry. So, I'm going to side with Borg here. I think, you know, being a former UFC title challenger, I mean, he really needs to get back on track. And while Silva is extremely dangerous, he's only really dangerous in one area, and Borg's biggest strength is the opposite of that area. So he should be able to avoid the feet and get this to the canvas. So my pick's going to be Borg. Now dropping down to the women's flyweight division, we have Roxanne Modafferi, who is 23-15, taking on Jennifer Maia, who is 16-5-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Maia open -130, the comeback on Modafferi at -110. Right now over at BetDSI, it's Maia -145, Modafferi +124. Line Martin's have tightened up. Seems like a pretty decent opener, staying fairly steady. It's been going back and forth. I mean, there has been two-way action on this fight as well, and it'll probably continue to be so. Modafferi's always one of those women that fly under the radar, not a lot of respect from her, typically speaking at the betting window or whatnot. In the last fight against Shevchenko, she ended up getting bet by a lot of sharp action, and she ended up coming through in what was a pretty competitive fight and a close fight. But Modafferi did what she had to do, get some takedowns there. She was going up against a striker, obviously. And her ground game and her wrestling and the way she goes about everything these days has gotten so much better through the years. Modafferi is one of the original throwbacks of women's MMA. I mean, she's been around the sport for so long, so you got to take your hat off to her. And I've been nothing but impressed with her career as a whole. I mean, she's definitely an awesome fighter to watch. So you got to, again, give her a lot of respect and the improvements that she's made. She's the type of fighter that just wants it so bad. She wants to wear that gold strap so bad. She puts the time in, the discipline in. you know, it shows. I mean, she's gotten herself really, really good. That said, Maya, I think along the same lines, has improved quite a bit as well. I mean, throughout her career. Now, she doesn't have the experience, or she's not the OG that Matafari is, but she's been around the sport for a while. She's finally coming over to the UFC. You know, obviously a lot of her fights have been in Invicta, and she had a lot of success in Invicta. And we could see, again, the progress and the growth in her game. And I think, obviously, these two have fought before in the past, and it was a very competitive fight with Maya edging it out. But I think even in this, you know, a couple years past, I think right now we're seeing both ladies at a different point in their careers, where I think both of them have improved even more. But I think Maya is going to be the one that's more effective in this spot here. I think Matafari is going to struggle with the takedowns. And if she can't keep Maya on the ground or get position and just get in a spot where she starts ground and pounding or tries to look for that sub, she's going to probably get hurt in this fight. Cause I think Maya is going to find her spots here, and Maya's going to do a little bit more damage, and she's going to end up Matafari. The problem with me is she takes too much damage. I mean, her defense on the feet, she's so slow at times, and she's so hittable. And I think that Maya is going to have the type of power that can connect and do some damage when she does connect. So, you know, I think that she's going to mark Matafari up. I think that as the fight progresses, it's going to get worse, and eventually Maya might even get a finish stoppage. If not, if it hits the scorecards, I think she's going to beat her up enough that she's going to sway the judges her way as well. So I get it. Matafari is always game. I do, like I said, have a tremendous amount of respect for her. And it wouldn't shock me if she pulled this fight out too, because I mean, she's always, like I said, underrated, under the radar, and you know, she finds a way to win. But I just think Maya stylistically is kind of a tougher matchup for her. Despite it being a close fight the first time, I think this fight is actually going to be a little bit more clear for Maya, and I think she is going to get the W. So my pick is Maya. And at the betting window, like I said, at this price, I think it's still a possibility to kind of get out and see where the action is the next couple of days. And, you know, if you can get a bet down on Maya, if the line drops back down a little bit, there might be a spot to bet at. Or, like I said, right now where it's at, some spots out there looking at the Don Best screen, there is some 135s out there. So, you know, it depends. Price a little bit. And if you could get minus 135, a small stab on Maya wouldn't really be that bad, I think, in this spot here. But it should be a good fight. But my pick is Maya.
And I'm going to come in the other way. Obviously, Maya is dangerous on the feet. She's strong. She puts on good pressure on her opponents. And while Matafari has made some serious strides in her stand-up, I still think that if this fight stays standing the whole time, that Maya would probably get the better of Matafari and win a decision. So I am concerned about that. But if you look, I mean, Matafari has really rounded out her game. Yeah, she's improved on the feet, but she's also... Matafari has also become a lot more dangerous with her wrestling. You saw that in the Shevchenko fight. I mean, obviously Shevchenko, Antonina Shevchenko, is extremely dangerous on the feet, being, you know, a world champion Muay Thai artist. So Matafari went to the wrestling. She scored takedowns. She repeatedly put Shevchenko on her back and kept her there. And while I do think it'll be more difficult to get Maya on her back, it's been done. I mean, Maya was taken down multiple times by Liz Carmouche in her UFC debut. So I think Matafari is as good of a wrestler as Liz Carmouche, and she has a better ground game than Liz Carmouche. So if she does take Maya down, she can keep her there. So I'm going to side with Matafari. I think this fight's going to be close because the takedowns won't come easy. But I think Matafari's made enough strides in rounding out her game that she can threaten on the feet at least enough to get Maya to respect her a little bit, and that will open up some takedown opportunities. So I'm going to side with Matafari. I think that this one goes like split decision level, but I think Matafari can get the job done. Now moving up to the light heavyweight division, we have Sam Alvey, who is 33-12, taking on Clidson Abreu, who is 14-3. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Abreu open minus 150, the comeback at plus 110. And right now what you're seeing over at BetDSI is Abreu minus 175, the comeback, and Alvey at plus 153. Line margins have tightened up a little bit more, actually coming in on Abreu, but there is two-way action on this fight as well, as people are betting Alvey at the dog price. So sportsbooks aren't going to be that bad off in most cases on this fight. It's kind of a tough one. I mean, realistically it is, because you have Abreu, which I think right now, obviously younger, I think the better, more well-rounded fighter. There's no question. Alvey having the more experience, the more quality experience. I mean, the guy's had a heck of a career overall. I think he's actually overachieved throughout, but we're starting to see a little bit of a decline from Alvey. So this makes it interesting, because I think Abreu is getting Alvey probably at the right time. And if that's the case, then I do think he's going to probably win because he's going to have more success standing. I think overall, Abreu is probably the more dive striker. He throws more of a variety at you. Obviously, Alvey kind of sits back and waits a little bit and looks to land that, you know, the one punch knockout, which he does have the capability to do. I mean, Alvey definitely, I mean, you wouldn't expect it seeing him at times, but he does have some underrated power. I mean, the guy has accuracy with it and he finds his target and it puts most people out. So when it does connect, so you got to respect Alvey on the feet for sure. He does have great takedown defense. Typically speaking as well. I mean, he's always trained with a bunch of wrestlers. He's, you know, he has been working on that his whole career and it's tough to take Alvey down. So he's the type of fighter that usually is able to sprawl and brawl, keep the fight upright. And if he lands that knockout blow, he's going to win. If it goes to the scorecards, his activity level sometimes hinders him and he ends up losing on the scorecards. But a lot of times they are pretty competitive or close fights, split decision type of fights. So that's what you get in Alvey. But again, I think he's getting a little bit more chinny. I think he's more hittable. I think Abreu is going to be a little bit faster. He's got the knockout power. Even though he's more known for the ground game, I think he's got enough power on the feet that he can make life miserable for Alvey in that aspect as well. I'm just expecting Abreu to take this fight to the ground. I think he's probably going to struggle to do so. If he does get Alvey to the ground, then obviously he can win the fight. I mean, the guy has definitely a level above Alvey in the submission aspect of things for sure. There's no doubt about that. But I do think that Abreu can even have success on the feet. Now, my issue with Abreu, though, is he's been tagged. He's been knocked out a couple times in his career. He's been rocked as well. We've seen him fight. So he's not really, you know, having a strong chin in his own right. So with that said, with Alvey's knockout power, that's where the danger lies in this fight, because Alvey probably will be able to keep this fight upright. And he does have that knockout power going up against a somewhat suspect chin. But both of these guys, I think, are capable of obviously landing one blow, knocking each other out. And if you look at the pure skill that goes along with it, I think it's Abreu's time right now. He's younger. He's the better mixed martial artist at this point, and he's capable of also knocking out or submitting Alvey. So I pick Abreu. I think he is going to get it probably done here, and he should. I hope he kind of does in a way. I mean, like I said, I've always been a fan and respect Sam Alvey. There's no doubt about that. But I think right now with the passing of the torch short thing, I mean, the UFC does match up these younger guns with some of the savvier old veterans, and it's for a reason. I mean, they want to get these guys some quality wins. So I think this would be a pretty quality win, obviously, on Abreu's record if he gets it over Alvey. So I want to see some of this new young guy making waves and keep on climbing up the ladders. And I think that's what we're going to see here with Abreu. And this will be a big confidence boost if he does get this win as well. So the pick is Abreu to win.
And I'm going to disagree with you, Nick. And actually, I'm going to use something you said, and it was that the takedowns will be hard to come by for Abreu. Because, yes, if Abreu wins this fight, I think it's going to be his ground game. I mean, that's by far his biggest strength. He has multiple submission victories throughout his career, including, you know, top UFC contender Johnny Walker. So if this fight goes to the floor, I would expect that it's Abreu that gets it there and potentially is able to tap out Sam Alvey. I mean, he's got 10 submissions. And he does have a few knockouts. So that, again, he does have a little bit of power, but he's not nearly the striker that he is the submission fighter. So with Alvey, you know that he wants to knock your head off. I mean, he's got good power, and he can do it in one shot. And unfortunately, sometimes he kind of sits back waiting for that one shot. So if he faces a good volume-based striker, he can get outpointed. But again, Abreu is really not that type of fighter on the feet. He really doesn't present nearly as much of a threat there. So I think Alvey can actually afford to sit back and kind of wait for that perfect moment. And I think it'll come because Alvey has very good takedown defense overall. And I expect that he'll be able to keep this fight standing. And then if and when he does, I think that he is able to either find that knockout shot or he gets the better of Alvey on the feet and gets the win. So Alvey's going to be my pick. Now, dropping down to the women's bantamweight division, we have Raquel Pennington, who is 9-7, taking on Irene Aldana, who is 10-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Aldana -145, Pennington +105. That was the opener. Right now, over at BetDSI, it is Aldana -147. Comeback on Pennington +125. Line margins have tightened up. Pretty solid opener. Staying steady right now as we're in another spot that's going to receive two-way action, and it'll continue to do so because both these ladies definitely earn respect at the betting window. Both of them have obviously become respected, I think, overall from the MMA community because they like Brown and they like to bring it. I mean, you know what you're getting with Aldana and Pennington. Pennington got her title shot. Obviously, she suffered back-to-back losses now since then, one of them being that title shot. To Nunes, you know, she's been getting beat up quite a bit. That Nunes fight was brutal. I mean, she followed it up by, again, getting beat up by Derandami. And I think right now, the stage that she's in her career, she knows she's not going to get back up to that title spot. So I think she's basically training, having fun, which is great. I mean, you want to see that, but I'm not sure where her motivation is right now, other than cashing a couple checks here for Pennington. So that means a lot to me mentally. And I think Aldana is on the other side of that. She's the one that's still trying to climb that ladder. She's the one that's still trying to get towards the top. She's the one that still has that motivation to be the best. And I'm saying all this because I think this is going to be a very, very competitive fight. And honestly, Pennington fighting in her prime at the point where she was, I think, on the rise, where she was fighting Misha Tate and beating them, you know, the people like that, the likes of Misha Tate, I should say. I think that Pennington probably wins the fight, but I don't think we're going to see that Pennington here. And I think Aldana is, again, the one that's kind of on the rise and the one that's kind of stepping up her game. And I think that's going to be enough to dethrone Pennington in this spot here. So I like Aldana. I think it's going to be a back and forth type of war. I think both of these ladies are going to have success. I think if it hits a scorecard, it's going to be relatively close, obviously. I mean, most, you know, women's bouts are, when it hits the cards, it seems more likely than not, when they're both talented and well matched like this fight is, it's going to be a competitive fight. So with all that said, though, I think Aldana can do more damage along the way. I think Pennington also at that spot in her career where I wouldn't be surprised if she starts getting finished. I mean, late in fights possibly as well. And Aldana is the kind of girl that wears it, but she keeps on coming and she don't quit. I mean, so both these ladies I think are going to be marked up bloody a little bit. It's going to be an all-out war. But I do think Aldana comes out ahead in this spot. And I do like the progression in her game. When she first hit the UFC, I've said it on other podcasts as well, I thought she was so overrated, and it kind of showed. I think a lot of people are expecting Aldana to be a contender right away, and she was not. But right now, she's working, she's improving, she's getting to that point where she's getting better. And I like to see that kind of growth and progress where, like I said, I think Pennington's trending in the other direction. So all signs indicate for me, Aldana probably should get the win here. It's all lining up for her to do it, so I'm going to pick her to win. And as far as the betting window goes, it is going to be a tight fight. So, I mean, right now, it's not a bad price. Again, looking at the Donbass screens, there's 135s out there or so. So maybe a small stab on Aldana, nothing too major. Would be justified because I do think she gets the W here, but you can't go crazy in this fight because if it does hit the scorecards, you know it's going to be a 29-28 or split decision type of fight. The pick is on.
Technically, Aldana is the better striker than Pennington, but Pennington does have a style that could give Aldana some fits. Pennington can potentially shoot for takedowns. Pennington likes to press forward. She's a pressure-based fighter. She throws a lot of volume. And Aldana doesn't really like people getting in her face. So you would think, at least on paper, that this is a pretty good matchup for Pennington, but you also have to factor in that Pennington has just been getting the crap kicked out of her for two fights in a row. She got just hosed by Amanda Nunes, and then most recently she definitely got beat up by Jermaine Durandamy. So she's basically spent about 7.5 or 6.5 rounds, just getting teed off against, by superior strikers. Now, Aldana isn't at that same level as Amanda Nunes and Jermaine Durandamy, but Aldana is a pretty dangerous striker. She has some heavy hands. She fights long. She has good straight punches, a good jab. So if she does stay on the outside, she could pick Pennington apart. If Pennington is really aggressive and moves forward, she can definitely win this fight, but I'm definitely concerned about the amount of damage she's been taking recently. And I feel like she's probably lost some motivation. I mean, it's almost certain that she's never going to get another opportunity at the belt, especially considering how one-sided it was when she finally did get her shot. But since she lost the shot, she then lost again. So, I mean, she could just be cash and paycheck at this point. So, I'm going to side with Irene Aldana. It feels like the momentum's on her side. And Pennington, while maybe a few fights ago I would definitely favor her here, I think that this Aldana could be getting Pennington at the right time in her career. So, like Nick said, this could be very competitive, and it would not shock me to see either fighter win this. But I'm going to go with Aldana. I think that she does outpoint Pennington enough from the outside to get the decision. Now, moving up to the featherweight division, we have Alex Caceres, who is 14-12, taking on Steven Peterson, who is 17-8. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Caceres open minus 130, the comeback on Peterson minus 110, and right now over at BetDSI, Caceres is minus 133, the comeback on Peterson at plus 112. So again, line margins have tightened up a little bit, two action coming into this fight, line staying fairly steady, and it is a pick'em type of fight. That's exactly why. This is a close one, man. I mean, I think Caceres is one of those guys that is underrated. If you look at just his resume or his record, just it's an eyesore. He's almost a 500 fighter, but man, he's got so much skill. He can hang with some of the best, and he's proven that throughout his UFC career. The guy's long for the weight class, of course. He's got some skill on the feet, so he could bother you with his length and with a little bit of power. For any frame, he does have a little bit of pop in his game, but more than that, I mean, he has a really good submission game. He's got underrated wrestling, so there's a lot to like about Caceres' game. Now, Peterson, you could say a lot of the same things about him. I think Caceres overall is probably the more gifted, the more talented fighter as far as offensively speaking, but I mean, he does have his defensive flaws, and I think that's where Peterson probably has an edge, meaning that, I mean, I think it's his toughness, it's his aggression. I think Peterson does have some defensive flaws as well. He does get marked up in fights, but I think he's the one that's still going to push forward. Caceres is kind of the one that's on his back foot at times as well. And I think it's going to be interesting to see who wins the grappling exchanges here or who gets top position if it goes to the ground, because I think I can see both of them doing so. So this is going to be a back-and-forth type of fight. Peterson has not had it easy since he's been in the UFC, to say the least. I mean, they match him up with some very tough, difficult competition. And he's performed respectable in those fights. I mean, it's tough, you know, coming in and fighting the likes, you know, of Davis like he did. He's coming off a loss. That was his debut, by the way. His official UFC debut was against Brandon Davis, and that was a pretty close fight, but he lost a decision there. But I'm talking about his loss recently to Pena. Obviously, Luis Pena is the UFC's very high on right now too, so that's not necessarily a bad loss. And I think in between there, he got a pretty decent win over Bissett. It's a close competitive fight, but Bissett's an underrated fighter in his own right. So Peterson's one of these guys, again, that the UFC hasn't done a lot of favors for, but he's been around the sport for so long, and he deserved to get a shot in the UFC, and I'm glad to see him make it over. With that said, this is going to be another difficult fight, but I think this is the time where Peterson's going to put his foot on the gas, and I think he's going to be able to probably steal some rounds here and grind Caceres out as the fight progresses a little bit. Because again, I think Caceres is going to throw everything he has at him, but I think Peterson's going to be able to absorb it and kind of push back, and that pushback is going to be enough to probably steal the scorecard for him. So I'm expecting a split decision type of fight. It's definitely a dog or pass situation when it comes to this fight, because I don't think you can lay chalk here either way. It is like I said, a pick'em type of fight. So if it's a dog or pass situation, you got to go Peterson or stay away from it. I'm actually going to pick Peterson to win because, like I said, I think his toughness and his aggression, just the way he goes about it, I think will be difficult for Caceres to outpoint him on the scorecards, and it probably does go. Now, I could see Peterson maybe taking Caceres' back and submitting him. I could see possibly Peterson maybe catching that suspect chin of Caceres and putting him out a little bit as well. I mean, that's not a question. But if he does not do that, Caceres is going to be rolling in offensive as well. I mean, offensively, he's going to have a lot of good things going for him. So Peterson's going to have to be defensively sound in this fight a little bit more so than normal. And we haven't seen that from either one of these guys really all that much. So it's going to get interesting. But with all that said, I do think Peterson can edge out the scorecard, so I'm going to go his way.
Technically, Alex Caceres is the better fighter here. I mean, he has the better pure stand-up, I feel. He has the better ground game. He's much more dangerous off of his back. So, you know, he has a lot going for him. But he also has a tendency to allow his opponents to dictate. Caceres is a little bit chinny. And we know that Steven Peterson is just a tough-as-nails veteran that can hang in there against guys. So I think in this fight, while, again, Caceres is the more technically sound fighter, I don't see him easily getting this fight to the floor where his ground game would be an advantage. And on the feet, while he does have some better pure skill from the outside, I think Peterson's the type of guy that can rely on pressing forward, putting that pressure on his opponent, making them fight off their back foot, and that's not really where Caceres is at his best. So Peterson's the type of guy that's just a high-volume, aggressive fighter, and I think the statistics back it up. So if Peterson is on that front foot and forcing Caceres to fight off of his back foot. He's going to be in good shape here. Even though Caceres is a little bit better defensively, I think the output from Peterson, the fact that he's willing to eat a shot, to dish one out, I think that'll actually be to his advantage, because I don't think Caceres can afford to eat those shots like Peterson can. So I think this will be competitive, but there's a reason that Caceres has lost 12 fights despite how skilled he is. And I think Peterson takes advantage of that, and I think he gets inside. I think he forces this to be more of a phone booth fight, and I think Peterson gets the job done. So my pick's going to be Stephen Peterson. Now, moving all the way up to the heavyweight division on the main card on ESPN, we have Andre Arlovsky, who is 27-17 in 2-0 contests, taking on Ben Rothwell, who is 36-11. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Rothwell opened -215, the comeback on Arlovsky at +165. Right now, what we're seeing over at BetDSI is Rothwell at -213, the comeback on Arlovsky +177. So again, line margins have tightened up. Two-way action coming into this fight. Not a lot of faith in these guys. I mean, Arlovsky's getting some respect, I'll tell you that much right now, from his performances, even though he's on a bit of a losing streak again. I mean, he's definitely the type of fighter that somehow, some way, ends up finding a spot where, in this run that he's on, that he's not getting knocked out. That chin has been so suspect for so many years. He's going in there against heavy hitters, and he is surviving. It's amazing to me, really. So, I mean, he's getting respect for that fact alone. And Arlovsky's a savvy vet, obviously, former UFC champion. He's been around the sport for a long time, has good boxing. I mean, a well-rounded game. We all know that. A good defense. He's game. And this is obviously a rematch from way back when, back in Affliction days, from these guys as well. When Arlovsky ended up knocking Rothwell out, I believe, in the third round. So, but you got to throw that out the window. That was so far back. I mean, you know, both of them are different fighters. And right now, Rothwell is a better fighter. So make no mistake about that as well. I think Rothwell's, I mean, as far as confidence level goes, everything. I mean, he knows he's on the upper echelon overall in the UFC, even though he's coming off of back-to-back losses. I mean, I think those losses are respectable losses. Ivanov is very underrated. I think he's one of the better heavyweights on the roster. A lot of people are going to probably argue that, but I do think he's underrated. I mean, he's just tough as nails and the style that he kind of comes at you with. And, you know, that was obviously a close fight there as well, but JDS, another one. So that's a different type of fight here, I think, for Rothwell, though. I think that Arlovsky, at this point of his career, I think Rothwell will be able to outpoint Arlovsky. If he doesn't knock him out, I think he will be able to beat him on the scorecards as well. So it'll go back and forth. And if it's, you know, if it's an Arlovsky fight that hits the scorecards these days, it's going to be close. So I'm expecting another close. If it does hit the scorecards, 29-28, competitive split decision type of fight. But I do think Rothwell edges it out here. Now, as far as the betting window goes, it has to be a dog or pass situation. I mean, I just don't have a lot of faith in Arlovsky these days, though, either. I mean, I think that just that terrible chin could just show up anytime, and I do have more confidence in Rothwell's chin in this spot here. Rothwell does have some power, and again, I think it's kind of his time right now. Even though he, I mean, age-wise and career-wise, they've both been around the sport for a long time, I still think that there's more upside to Rothwell at this point, despite both these guys suffering some losses here. So I like Rothwell. I think he does avenge his loss from a few years back and get the win over Arlovsky, whether it's inside the distance or possibly on the scorecards. But again, scorecards are definitely going to be tighter if that's the case. But I do think Rothwell could probably finish it before he gets there. So the pick is Rothwell, more than likely by knockout.
And I'm going to go with Rothwell as well. Andre Arlovsky, he had that, you know, brief moment where it looked like he was having a miniature career renaissance, and now he's back to losing, you know, winless in his last four fights again. I mean, he's had some competitive moments against some, you know, up and coming guys, but, Arlovsky just doesn't really, I mean, he's a veteran. He can hang with guys. He can be competitive, but it just doesn't feel like he's doing enough to actually try to win. And while Rothwell isn't exactly the most athletic and, you know, guy that's going to get in his face and beat him to the punch, I feel like if these guys are trading blow for blow, I mean, Rothwell's chin is 10 times better than Arlovsky's. And while Arlovsky actually hasn't been blasted off of his feet for a while now, I still feel like Rothwell has enough power to do it. And if these guys are trading and both eating shots, it's definitely going to be Arlovsky that goes down first. So this fight could be fun. It could, But, I mean, Arlovsky fights just have not been fun that much lately. I mean, he's just been a lot more defensive. It feels like he's been fighting not to lose instead of actually fighting to win. And I think if he brings that into a Ben Rothwell fight, Rothwell has kind of this moment in fights where he'll just, like, kind of get a little crazy and just start pushing forward really aggressively, haphazardly. And if he does that against Arlovsky, I don't think Arlovsky can stop it. So, I think that, Rothwell finally gets that, monkey off his back after, returning from the long layoff when, you know, the Ivana fight didn't go that well, but I think that he can beat Arlovsky here. So I'm going to side with Ben Rothwell. Now dropping down to the lightweight division, we have Alexander Hernandez, who is 10-2, taking on Francisco Trinaldo, who is 23-6. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Hernandez -175, Trinaldo +135 was the opener. And right now, what you're seeing over at BetDSI, Hernandez bet up to -204, the comeback on Trinaldo at +174. So line merchants have tightened up, more actually coming in Hernandez's way. I get it. I mean, just the youth factor alone. I mean, he's 26 years old, Trinaldo at 40. So, I mean, that opens some eyes. And, I mean, you have to. I know that Trinaldo is not the typical 40-year-old. I think the guy's actually improved overall with age, but father time comes up to everybody. And despite him being dangerous, I think that this is a spot where Hernandez can bounce back and get a quality win over a very tough opponent that still has a lot left in the tank in Trinaldo. So, but with that said, again, the youth factor does play in a little bit. I think Hernandez is going to have some advantages, but both these guys are quality. Let's just get that out of the way first. There's no doubt about that. I mean, both of these guys at lightweight are tough outs, and both of them, I think, you know, are kind of upper tier lightweights for sure. Hernandez was surprisingly destroyed by Cerrone in the last fight. I'm surprisingly, because I thought he was actually going to win that fight against Cerrone. And Cerrone just went out there and showed us that he's not done, obviously. I mean, he's been on a heck of a run in his own right recently again, the resurgence of Cerrone's career. But along the way, Hernandez, unfortunately, was in that path. And that opened some eyes for me. I mean, I think trust Hernandez all the way at this point, even though that was a respectable loss. And it happens, of course. I mean, all these fighters, you know, are going to take some setbacks in their career as they're up-and-coming guys, for sure. But that said, it was kind of surprising. And Trinaldo can present a lot of problems in this fight, especially on the feet, I think, more so. I mean, he has those nasty kicks, of course, to the body. He's got some power in his hands as well. He's got the killer instinct. Hernandez has to be careful, and he has to respect Trinaldo's game. I think Hernandez is boxing. And again, he's got some nice kicks to go along with it as well. He's flexible. I think his speed and his power can definitely – honestly hurt Trinaldo here as well. So I think on the feet, they're both capable of hurting each other. And again, that speed factor with Hernandez closing that gap again, being in there, should be doing well for him in this fight here. But I think more so than anything, it's the wrestling he's going to have to utilize here in this spot. Trinaldo has some pretty good takedown defense, typically speaking. It's only kind of the higher level guys that have been able to take him down and control him on the ground. I think Hernandez is capable of doing that as well. So I think this is a spot here where realistically Hernandez, if he feels like he's in trouble on the feet, he could just shut down possibly, even if it's tough. If he sticks with the game plan, he could probably get Trinaldo down and kind of steal rounds this way as well. So competitive on the feet, get some takedowns, grind him out a little bit, slow this fight down. I mean, try to be as safe as you can really for Hernandez, because Trinaldo is that kind of dangerous opponent. And if you get the opportunity, obviously, to land flush and maybe connect and put that 40-year-old chin out of Trinaldo, it's possible that could happen as well. So I do see why people like Hernandez here. I agree. I think he is probably going to win this fight. But as far as the betting window goes, as this price keeps climbing, I would probably stay away from it at this point for sure. Because again, we just have to see more of Hernandez right now. I was on his train for sure. I'm not jumping off that bandwagon yet. I'm not saying that. I mean, Hernandez, there's lots to like about him again at age 26, but that Cerrone fight definitely has to open up everybody's eyes a little bit. He's probably not quite what we think he is at this point of his career. But again, the future is bright for Hernandez, and I think he does get a quality win here. So I'm just telling everybody that, because I think you have to approach this with caution, but I do think he gets a W. So the pick is Hernandez, and hopefully he bounces back with an impressive win.
You'd think after at least some point that Francisco Trinaldo would start to slow down. I mean, usually fighters lightweight and lower, there's – like this chart you can almost look at and see that anybody getting past a certain age just cannot hang anymore, because the lower weight classes, you need the reflexes, you need to have the speed. I mean, you just cannot afford to lose a step, but Francisco Trinaldo has not done it yet. Granted, his last fight, he faced another guy that retired right afterwards, so in Evan Dunham, but this time around, Trinaldo is facing a killer. I mean, Alexander Hernandez is very talented. I mean, I've underrated him. I thought he'd lose his UFC debut, and he just went on a steamroll Benil Dariush. So this kid has power on the feet, and then obviously he's very dangerous on the ground. That's probably where he's more dangerous than anywhere. So, in this fight here, I mean, you're going to be seeing, it's going to be youth versus experience because, Trinaldo, you know, he's got power on the feet. He has, you know, a good volume. He's a good technical striker. He can mix things up. I mean, that knee that he finished Dunham with was unbelievable. Just a perfectly timed step in knee caught, Dunham right in the liver and just folded him in half. So, Hernandez is going to have to be careful. He can't just go charging in head first looking for takedowns or he's going to eat one of those knees. So, I expect this fight will be competitive, but, I feel like at some point, Trinaldo has to start to slow down. He has been defeated, a couple times in recent bouts. So, it may be very slowly starting to seesaw away from him, but, I think in this bout, the youth will prevail. I'm going to side with Hernandez because I think that on the feet, he's powerful and quick enough to hang and at least be competitive with Trinaldo. Although I would expect Trinaldo to potentially win a pure stand-up contest, but where Hernandez shines is where with him getting takedowns. He has, Trinaldo has 63% takedown defense, which is decent, but not great. And I think, if this shoots in, repeatedly, he's going to be able to get him down and keep him down. So, I'm going to side with Hernandez. I think the fact that you can bring in his wrestling to play with the stand-up makes him much more dangerous. And I think that he has a little bit more to offer at this point in his career. So Hernandez is going to be my pick. Now, sticking with the lightweight division, we have James Vick, who is 13-3, taking on Dan Hooker, who is 18-8. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Hooker open minus 185, Vick plus 145. Now over at BetDSI, it is Hooker minus 143, the comeback on Vick plus 124. So live markets have tightened up, more action coming in James Vick way. Not really that surprised. Vick has been a popular guy amongst the MMA community, amongst the betting community, of course, with Vick's picks and whatnot as well. I mean, he knows he's into MMA gambling or whatnot. That's pretty cool. You got to respect that. So again, popular figure. I think a lot of people like his attributes physically. I mean, he's definitely a big guy for the lightweight division. I mean, he showed that he knows how to utilize that length well. He's got good wrestling, good takedown defense, very dangerous with his submissions, especially around your neck. I mean, so there's a lot to like about Vick, but what I don't like, and I've always had a problem with, is that tall man's defense that he does have at times, and he is a bit chinny, and that's been, you know, tested out, and he's not past that in most cases. Now, I got to give him credit because at times, I mean, even in fights like that, he's coming off of a loss to Paul Felder, which was a very close competitive bounce back after that destruction to the hands of Gaethje that he suffered, which was needed to see because, you know, he needed a bounce back and not get knocked out in a fight like Felder. And he did, even though he lost a close competitive decision. That was good to see. So his chin, again, held up a little bit there. But this is a different type of fight that he's going to have against Hooker here. I think that, I mean, Felder is a powerful guy, definitely has knockout power and has the ability to do that. But I think Felder is more of the guy that's going to kind of look dot point you, land his clean shots and punish you that way as well, where Hooker's going to kind of throw caution to the wind and just go after you. He's going to come in more like Gaethje, honestly, to try to come in and take your head off. So that's what you can kind of expect from Hooker. I mean, it didn't work out for him that well last fight, but he was fighting Edson Barboza, one of the best strikers that ever graced the octagon. So, I mean, and he had his moments in that fight, but man, did Barboza put a hurting on him as the fight progressed, of course. But Hooker showed a lot of toughness in that fight as well. So, I mean, a lot of stupidity, a lot of bad IQ because, I mean, the punishment that he was absorbing, I get it. I understand it. But I think in this fight, this might bode well for him. If he doesn't run into a Vick knee or something of that nature, I think that he's actually going to be able to close that gap and find that target. He's a more accurate striker than Vick is. And I think I've seen a lot of improvement in Hooker's game. I mean, I honestly thought that he was going to beat Barboza, honestly. I mean, Barboza, again, I was wrong. You know, obviously I can admit that. But before that, it was all the improvements that I really saw. in Hooker's game. It was very impressive. I mean, he was facing decent competition and he was just running through that decent competition as well. So, I mean, let's not forget, just because he got destroyed by Barboza in the last fight, what he did right before that. I mean, we saw the improvements in Hooker's game and he continues to do so. So, I mean, maybe that Barboza loss took a lot out of him, more than I expect. I don't know. I mean, I'm a little bit worried, I guess, about that, because the beating he took was pretty bad in that fight, but I expect him to bounce back here and look good, honestly, against another worthy opponent in Vic. So this should be an awesome fight. I mean, this card from top to bottom, honestly, is flying under the radar a little bit. This is a good card. I mean, there's a lot of good, well-matched fights. So, you know, I think you got to take your hat off to the UFC for that as well. But with all that said, I'm going to pick Hooker. I really think that he is the better fighter right now at this point, and I think he's the more dangerous fighter and more capable fighter at this point as well. And with the price drop, there's some value that did open up on Hooker. So this might not be a popular opinion, but I think there's some value Hooker where the price is right now. So don't go crazy again, because, you know, like I said, we just seen both these guys, what they can do against high level competition. And, you know, Hooker's coming off that crazy loss, but with all that said, he should win this fight. I expect him to, and I'm going to back him here again. My pick is Hooker.
And I'm going to go with Hooker as well. James Vick is dangerous, and he has length, he has height, and the longer a fight goes, Vick actually gets more dangerous because he's able to kind of adapt to his opponent. So if Dan Hooker's going to win, he needs to be very aggressive early, because Vick can be a slow starter. Vick has a pretty good ground game, but I don't think that he'll be able to utilize it here unless Hooker does something silly like shoot in and expose, because Vick has a very dangerous guillotine shot. Choke. But on the feet, while Vic does have that length, it takes him a little bit of time to settle in and then find that range. And until then, he can get blasted. I've seen it against Darius. We've seen it against Gaethje. And Hooker has just as much power as those guys. So if Hooker is able to get inside and just turn this into a slugfest, I don't see how Vic can survive. He just does not have the durability. Hooker, on the other hand, I mean, it took a kitchen sink and then some from Edson Barboza to finally put him away. I mean, we were feeling bad for him with how much punishment he was taking and still not getting finished. I just don't think James Vick is even close to as technically sound as Edson Barboza to be able to exploit Hooker there. I think this will be a lot more competitive in the stand-up, and while maybe Vic could pull away late if this does go to decision, I just don't see it going to decision, because Dan Hooker is crazy powerful. I mean, this guy has finished some really nasty fighters along the way, and I just don't think James Vic can survive eating even one or two clean shots from him. So if Hooker's able to connect with anything solid in the first 5 minutes, I think Vic gets hurt, and I think Hooker pounces and puts him away. So if Vic is able to survive, then he could potentially play spoiler here, but I see Hooker as the aggressor. I think that he just throws caution to the wind a little bit, and I think he gets inside and connects and gets the win. So Dan Hooker is going to be my pick. Now moving all the way up to the heavyweight division, we have Greg Hardy, who is 3-1, taking Juan Adams, who is 5-0. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Adams open -155, Hardy +115. Right now over at BetDSI, it is current -110 Hardy, -109 Adams. Pick 'em fight, basically. Two-way action coming in, back and forth. Early action coming in on Hardy. Action flip back towards Adams. Back in on Hardy now. There's going to be a lot of action on this fight. And more of the public action is definitely going to come in on Greg Hardy. Obviously, he's the more popular of the two, more of a household name being in the NFL or whatnot. But this should be a good fight. I mean, I'm glad the UFC matched it. Obviously, Adams was hunting for this fight for a long time. They got some bad blood between them. But you better be careful what you ask for. I mean, Hardy is definitely capable of doing some damage. And we've seen Adams, you know, coming off of his last fight, he kind of got exposed more. So we all knew, I mean, it's not Adams' stand-up game or whatnot that's going to come into play all that much. He's still a little bit raw. He's got knockout power, don't get me wrong, but it's more of Adams' wrestling, his takedowns, his ability to ground and pound his opponents and beat him on the floor that comes into play against a guy like Hardy. Because on the feet, make no mistake that Hardy is going to be the person that has knockout power, the explosiveness the edge with his hands, and Adams does not want to deal with that because I think that Hardy can and will knock him out if Adams messes around on the feet too long with Hardy. So his path to victory for Adams is definitely getting the fight to the floor and trying to hold Hardy down, get in position, and just pound him. And I think he's able to do that. I mean, he does have a wrestling background. Hardy, being the athlete that he is, I mean, world class, he's always going to get better. That's the wild card factor here for me as well. I mean, Hardy's just athleticism, and I mean, he can make improvements by leaps and bounds between fights, and he could definitely absorb things like his takedown defense or, you know, when he's drilling stuff. I think it's going to be faster for him to pick up stuff like that than it is for the normal person, obviously, with that athleticism that he has. So the improvements that he can make in between fights, I mean, it's going to have to be drastic here, but I think, I mean, he showed some takedown defense, some okay takedown defense thus far. I think it's going to be a little bit different with Adams, though, in this spot here. So we'll see. I mean, this is definitely a wild card back and forth because both these guys are so raw. It could end up being a sloppy fight, but I'm going to lean towards the wrestler here. I think that Adams does get the takedown eventually. If he doesn't get caught on the way in, if Masvidal to Ben Askren, something like that happens, I think that he can end up getting the fight to the floor. And once he does, I think he knows what to do, and he's been working on it for sure. Make no mistake, Hardy's been drilling his takedown offense, and Adams has been drilling his takedown offense along with what he does once he gets on the ground, how to finish Hardy as well. So I think he's going to be prepared to do so, and I'm going to side with Adams to get the W here over Hardy. So the pick is Adams, and if he definitely flips to plus money, there's going to be some value there. This is a tough one to bet, so I'm not going to go out there and recommend a bet either, to be honest with you. But the plus money, I can understand going either way here. So if you guys hop on Hardy plus money, I could respect that, but I think more so if Adams gets to a dog, and he might, because again, we don't have a fight day, the public action overall should be coming a little more on Hardy, right? So with that said, Adams might get to even money, plus money. If so, maybe take a little small stab at Adams, because I do think his wrestling comes into play here, and if he can hold up and fight smart, he gets it done. So the pick is Adams to win.
And I'm going to come in the other way. I mean, maybe against a more experienced wrestler of an opponent, I would think Greg Hardy would have some issues, but Juan Adams is still extremely raw. I mean, this guy did not impress me that much so far in his UFC time. I mean, it just feels like he's a little sloppy, very, very not technically sound in any particular area. And I think he gets tired. So, against somebody like Greg Hardy, who has just so much explosive power, I mean, this guy can just hit you one time and you are in huge trouble. I think Juan Adams is just a little too slow. So I think that Hardy can just crack him on the way in. Also, if Juan Adams does get the takedown, I don't think that he has the top control and the technical skill to keep Hardy down. Even if Hardy doesn't have amazing technical skill on the ground, I think Hardy is just a good enough athlete, being a former, NFL, star player, that I expect Hardy would be able to just turn and, even not using technique, just use that athleticism to explode back his feet. I just don't see Adams having that same level of success that other people see him having. So I think Hardy is just much faster. I think he's a lot more dangerous. And even though Adams is pretty tough, I think, even tough guys would get knocked out in one punch by Greg Hardy. So I'm going to side with Greg Hardy. I think he gets the job done here. I think he knocks Juan Adams out at some point in the first round. So Greg Hardy is going to be my pick. Now, moving on to the co-main event of the evening, also in the heavyweight division, we have Alexei Oleinik, who is 57-11-1. Taking on Walt Harris, who is 11-7 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Harris opened -135, the comeback on Oleinik at -105. Looking over at BetDSI right now, it is Harris coming in at -161, the comeback on Oleinik +142. So line marks have tightened up, a little bit more action coming in on Harris. Again, youth factor here. No doubt about that. I mean, Harris is kind of on the rise, and Oleinik, it's hard to say for me if Olenek's on the decline. I mean, he's 42 years old. You expect that, but holy cow, man, the guy has overachieved in the UFC thus far. I mean, again, it took him long enough to get into the UFC. You know, I mean, he's been a veteran of the sport for a long time, but I think he's never been better with age. I mean, really, he's training at ATT. He's just in the right place mentally, physically, everything about him other than Father Time catching up with him. And, you know, and it probably is little by little, but Olenek is just such a tough dude that he doesn't let that get to him either. I mean, he's just one of those fighters that, I mean, he gives it everything he's got when he's in there, despite who the opponent is. And that includes throwing bombs. I mean, he's got that old man strength. Even though he's not known for his striking, he's got old man strength. And if he connects, man, you're in some serious trouble. But of course, it's his ground game that is highlighted. And he is one of the better, you know, finishers on the ground that we've seen in the sport. So he's dangerous in all aspects of the game. But Harris got some advantages to go along with that youth. He's going to have some speed. He's going to have the overall striking edge for sure, in this spot here. And if he can hold this fight upright, I think, and obviously not get clipped by one of those big bombs that Olenek's going to throw, Harris is probably going to be able to stop Olenek along the way. So these guys are capable of fitting other, I think. I'm going to go with the old man, though, still. I mean, it's tough to pick 42-year-olds these days. I mean, it really is, but I really think Olenek is just a dangerous, tough matchup, even though Harris, again, is on the rise. And I like what I see from him lately. I don't think he's ever really, he's been more confident. You know, I think he's at the point right now that he, you know, he's coming off of a few solid wins over decent competition. And I mean, mentally, he's saying the right things. Physically, he's looking good as well. I mean, he's at the top of his game right now. So there's a lot of confidence behind Harris, and Olenek has to be careful. If he doesn't get the fight to the ground, he's going to have to respect Harris on the feet as well. So with all that said, though, I still think Olenek, it's a dog or pest situation. I don't trust Harris here. This is a tough matchup for him. I think it might be a too big of an obstacle for him to conquer with Olenek trying to get this fight to the floor. He's even had, I mean, we've seen it before. He doesn't even have to get it to the floor to submit people. He could be even on his back and still submit you with the Ezekiel choker, whatnot for Olenek. So, I mean, he's just so slick with the submissions. They standing up on, you know, off his back on top. Obviously, top position is the best way for him, but I mean, he's just so slick about going about it. Those neck cranks, everything. So I think if this fight hits the floor, Harris is done, obviously, pretty quick like. But if not, they both have a shot at actually landing on the chin. I mean, Harris has shown a sign of a weak chin at times as well through his career. He's been a bit chinny. Like I said, I think he's never been better though right now. So we'll see if that comes into play. But my pick is Olenek, and there is a little bit of value on him still, I think, at this point.
And I'm going to come in the other way. Now, obviously, if Olenek can get this to the floor, he's going to win. Walt Harris is not a particularly talented ground fighter. He is a good athlete, but Verdum easily took Harris to the ground and tapped him out when Harris stepped up on short notice to fight him a few years back. So I would expect that if this fight does at some point go to the ground, it's Olenek's to lose. Even if Olenek does something silly like pull guard right into full mount, because he's done that before to set up an Ezekiel choke. So like, if it goes around in any way, even if Harris is on top, I would think Olenek can get the submission. That being said, you know, Olenek is getting old, man. He's in his mid-40s now, and Harris is, he's got some power, and he's improving on the feet. I mean, he's been in there against some pretty decent fighters, and he's been getting the better of them lately. I feel like Harris is starting to turn the corner from prospect to at least player in the division. I don't know if he'll ever earn a title shot or anything, but I think that he's worthy of being ranked and sticking around against ranked opponents and getting some quality names on to pad his resume. And it feels like this is an opportunity for Harris to catch somebody that's ranked ahead of him that's vulnerable. And we do know that while Alexei Olenek has picked off several fighters along the way in his career, he's still vulnerable. I mean, I will never forget, you know, even back in the Bellator heavyweight tournament, you know, Olenek just ate one huge shot from somebody and got taken out. So that's all it takes. And Harris definitely has the power to do that. So while I don't know if Harris can play cat and mouse quite as well as Alistair Overeem did most recently against Olenek, I think Harris has power to just change the scope of this fight at any moment's notice. So even though Olenek is going to be dangerous and he has more ways to win, because Olenek does have some power in his own right, I'm going to side with Harris. I think youth prevails again here, and I think that Harris connects, and I think he takes Olenek out before this fight goes to the ground. So my pick's going to be Harris. Now, moving on to the main event of the evening in the welterweight division, we have Rafael Dos Anjos, who is 28-11, taking on Leon Edwards, who is 17-3. Now, Nick, Where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Dos Anjos, RDA open minus 135, the comeback on Edwards minus 105. And right now, main event over at BetDSI is minus 127 for Edwards. Dos Anjos, RDA is at plus 106. So line flipped, two-way action again on this fight. It's been going back and forth. I mean, it's been flipping back and forth as well. So a lot of two-way respect here. And it's a tough fight. I've been flipping back and forth with this pick as well, because to me, there's no question who the better mixed martial artist here is. It's Dos Anjos. I mean, I think the guys look great, obviously, since he moved up to welterweight. I'm surprised that he's been able to do what he has done. I mean, he's been hanging with the best of the best out there. I mean, his losses really have been to Usman and Covington, two of the guys that are, you know, wearing straps. Obviously, Usman is the champion right now, and Covington was the interim champ. So two of the best grinders, wrestlers that are in the sport are the ones that were able to beat him in this weight class. Outside of that, even Kevin Lee in his last fight, it was a bad look for Kevin Lee. I mean, Dos Anjos, you know, took him to school there. So a lot to like about Dos Anjos, honestly, since he's moved up. I think it was the right move, but he is a little bit chinny. I mean, we've seen that, you know, in the past. I mean, his chin has obviously held up fairly well in recent fights. I mean, since Alvarez lost, which I believe was in late 2016 or so, or mid 2016, he hasn't really had much of an issue, but that is there. I mean, you know, that Alvarez loss is there, and you have to keep that in mind a little bit as well, because Edwards is the type of fighter that's how he wins fights. He's got knockout power. I mean, he has that precision. He's got that accuracy, and he punches. I mean, he hits, and he lands on you. You're going to be in some serious trouble. He's got that kind of knockout threat always. Now, of course, Edwards is getting better with his game. He's starting to utilize his wrestling a lot more, we've seen lately, which is smart. I mean, the guy's strong. He's got an advantage here overall. He's going to have some size over Dos Anjos, and he's probably going to be the stronger fighter here, obviously, as well. Technically speaking, though, he's not up to par with Dos Anjos across the board. That's why this makes it a difficult fight for me, because I can see this playing out so many ways. I think if it hits the scorecards, I can see RDA kind of outpointing Edwards and winning on the scorecards, or I can see Edwards possibly losing the fight and just landing that one punch that finishes Dos Anjos in a pretty competitive fight at that point as well. Or I can see Edwards maybe stealing the fight by getting a few takedowns along the way and putting RDA on his back. Even though RDA does have great takedown defense, again, it's the elite level guys that are capable of putting him on his back and kind of grinding him out that way. I'm not sure if Edwards could do that, but with what we've seen and the improvements we've seen in his wrestling game and the size advantage here, he might be able to get some along the way. So that's why it's a tough fight. I think, like I said, I'm leaning a little more towards Edwards right now. I think this matchup was kind of catered towards him. He's been on a heck of a run. I mean, Edwards has looked really good. He's never been better. His win over Gunnar Nelson last time was great too. I mean, you just have to take your hat off for Edwards. But RDA, like I said, he's been game, and he is, I think, just been, you know, out of this world. He's been overachieving in my opinion as well, since he came, like I said, to welterweight. So I got a lot of respect for both guys. That's why you guys could probably tell I've been going back and forth. So not a confident pick, but I'm going to lead Edwards' way. I think, like I said, matchup-wise, he wins this fight. It's a big, you know, step forward. We'll see what the UFC does next. I mean, the rumor is that the, you know, winner of this fight is not going to obviously fight for a title, but winner of this fight is going to get a marquee matchup next outside of that as well. So might be Masvidal for Edwards next as well, which a lot of us obviously want to see that. So I'm going to pick Edwards to win, but again, it's not a confident pick because RDA has been so good, and I can see him stealing this fight as well. So the caution is there. I mean, this is a true pick-em type of fight. I'm going to side with a bigger fighter, the guy that can end the fight with one punch more so. No, don't get me wrong. I should clarify this a little bit as well. Dos Anjos can win this fight with one punch as well. Dos Anjos has good, really good striking, and Edwards has been rocked in fights. Even though he hasn't been knocked out, he's been hurt in several fights, and RDA can have success on the feet. So I wanted to get that in there before I'm done with this fight, breaking down this fight. So I'm not saying that Edwards, you know, is going to roll over RDA, or there's no chance he gets knocked out. RDA can definitely hurt Edwards on the feet as well. That's one thing in the back of my mind that concerns me about Edwards at times is his strike defense and ability to, you know, for punishment to land and get through on him. And I think he needs to be a little bit quicker and move the head off the center line a little bit more than he does so. But with all that being said, still, I do lean Edwards' way. I just think his time is now. He's the younger fighter. He's a little bit fresher overall. It's going to be a hard fight, big step up in competition again, but he's been doing well, and he's been kind of working through all those hard obstacles lately. So I think that he continues here against RDA. The pick is Edwards for me.
And I'm going to go the other way. I think Rafael Dos Anjos, being the more technically sound fighter, should have the edge here. Yes, Leon Edwards has really added wrestling to his game, and that is the one area where Dos Anjos has been vulnerable so far in his career. It seems like with Dos Anjos, you look at some of his losses, and You know, it was Khabib taking him down repeatedly. It was Colby Covington, a lot of pressure taking him down. Kamaru Usman, a lot of pressure taking him down. So if Edwards is able to get going, then yeah, he can get the win. But, you know, Kevin Lee was a tremendous wrestler, and he got completely shut down by Dos Anjos. And we've seen other good wrestlers get shut down by Dos Anjos. You know, Jason High, Benson Henderson. So it's not a given that just because you're a good wrestler, you can take Dos Anjos out. I mean, you have to be an elite wrestler. And those three that I mentioned are three of the best pound-for-pound wrestlers at the UFC. They've all been champion guys. And I don't know if Edwards is champion level. I mean, he's good. He's been on a nice run. But Dos Anjos presents some serious challenges here because Dos Anjos is so technically sound on the feet. I think while Edwards has some talent there, and Edwards has, you know, he outstruck Donald Cerrone, but when, you know, Dos Anjos destroyed Cerrone. So I don't think that that's even that much of a comparison. Edwards gets outstruck in terms of volume by Dos Anjos. Edwards doesn't have the same striking defense as Dos Anjos. And then in terms of grappling, if Edwards does shoot in for takedowns, I think Dos Anjos, that his 58% takedown defense is a little underrated because you're factoring in Khabib, Covington, Usman. I think, yeah, he's had some trouble fending those guys off, but I mean, if Edwards is at that level, then he's going to be fighting for a title soon. And I just don't quite think he's at that level. So I'm going to say that Rafael Dos Anjos is able to, even though Edwards has a reach advantage and is quite a bit taller, I think Dos Anjos is still able to make it work because he's so technically sound. I think he's going to make Edwards miss, and he's going to slip some punches, and then he's really going to start being the aggressor moving forward. And unless Edwards is just dynamite with his accuracy and landing solid counters off of his back foot, I think Dos Anjos' pressure eventually just forces Edwards to give up on fighting long. And that's when Dos Anjos is going to shine. So once he gets inside and finds opportunities to connect, he's going to score. And I think not only can he score, I think he can knock Edwards out. We've seen Edwards hurt. We've never seen him finished. But I think that Dos Anjos has the ability to put him away, whether it's with a knockout or potentially. Don't be shocked if even Dos Anjos shoots for takedowns. He actually is more aggressive looking for takedowns per fight than Edwards does, even though I think Edwards has a little bit better wrestling. So I think Dos Anjos is just so well-rounded here and can mix it up with just about anything, especially body kicks. I think body kicks are going to be really important here. They can slow Edwards down, and they can kind of neutralize a little bit of Edwards' size advantage. I just really like Dos Anjos. I think that he gets the job done. I think that he could win a decision. I think he could win by stoppage. So Dos Anjos is going to be my pick. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC on ESPN4. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsBreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to BetDSI. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.